talking, mom's talking, just a couple of moms talking. Welcome back to Mom's Talking. What episode is this? Four?
Four.
We're on number four. And every episode, our number of moms grows by one. But I think we've hit our ceiling.
We're topped out.
Yep. Unless somebody's absent, no one else can join us for now. Although we were talking about having some special
guests here.
Special
and there.
Guests. Guests. We're going to bring in some special guests.
If it arises.
Yeah. But I'm going to let everyone go around and say hello and say your name so people can get used to your voice.
Okay. I'm Andrea. Hello.
I'm Jackie. Hello.
I'm Patty. Karen. You're up.
I'm Karen. Hi.
And our new mom.
Hello.
And so, Pam, say that again because I talked over you a little bit.
I'm Pam.
And all the Simons, oh no, they're not all Simons, they're Jaggers.
They're Jaggers.
Y'all yeah. sound the same.
I know.
Similar.
We're going to try to distinguish our voices. I'll talk like this. Just kidding. We're just going to talk like ourselves. So Pam, Karen, and I are biological sisters, and we're all sister resistors here. So
yay. Love that term.
Yeah. So, well, I think we sound
Different enough. I can hear you.
Fairly
yeah.
different.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we all have different senses of humor, right?
And different laughs.
Yeah. Okay.
Laughs, yeah. Maybe.
All right.
I think laughs are different.
And Pam and Karen are joining us by Skype. So if the quality of their voices sounds a little bit different, that's why we only spent an hour wrestling with technology today, guys.
And we already probably had three or four podcasts in there, too.
So we solved some of the world's problems while we were waiting. So, you guys, you know, this might be our last podcast because Trump is turning off the internet. I don't know if you heard that.
I did not hear that. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What are we, Korea? Oh, my gosh.
Yep. He's going to call Bill Gates, he said. He's gonna...
I totally didn't hear that. See, now that's something to laugh about. That's
yeah.
funny.
Yeah. He said that ISIS uses the internet to recruit, so he's going to have it turned off.
Oh, yeah. If those 600 tech companies who are against appealing like, DACA yeah. are going to support him on that.
But the problem is, if he turns off the internet, how will he get reelected?
How will he? Can he retweet and all of that without it?
Tweet.
Can all that work? It's like, you know, taking his IV out, for goodness
yeah.
sakes.
I don't think he realizes that Twitter's on the internet.
He probably just thinks it's on his phone.
So. Yeah, it's just on the phone.
It just goes out there.
It's like everything else he says. He says some crazy thing, and then
oh, yeah. crap. That's
tomorrow he'll go, oh, I did not realize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has to backtrack.
I didn't realize it was that hard to turn off the internet, you know.
Yeah, it's a switch.
Well, if
it's
he can do it, you know, he's wonderful.
It's the best. I've got the best switch in the whole world.
He's going to make a wall. Internet. An internet wall.
An internet wall. That's right. He's going to put the internet behind his wall. But you know, speaking of people who do their research, you guys, Hillary's everywhere.
I'm sorry, because it was kind of quiet for a while, right?
Yeah.
And now it's everywhere, so it's kind of exciting.
I am excited.
I like it.
She makes me feel calm.
Yes.
I feel like there's a grown-up back in the room. Grandma is here, people.
Yes.
Karen, I know you're excited. You're watching Hillary on all the shows.
Don't get me started, because I'll start crying.
Oh, okay.
Wait till the yeses and noes.
Okay, no, wait till the yeses and noes. All right. Well, I started listening to her book, and I'm listening to it because I like she reads it on Audible, and I like hearing her read it, and it's
that's great.
Yeah, it's cool because I only listen to a chapter at a time because I'm kind of savoring it, so I haven't gotten very far. But in the first couple of chapters, she talks about how she, you know, recovered after her loss, and she did a lot of self-care, and she talks about the recommendations that people gave her for feeling better, which included, like, drinking wine and watching the Gilmore Girls. And then she said that she and Bill did a lot of binge-watching, and they
love it.
Yeah, they love CSI, and Bill says CSI Los Angeles is the best CSI,
ooh.
In case anyone was wondering. What Bill Clinton thought
know.
The best CSI was.
I'm sure we'd find it amusing because yeah. we know where, like, every street is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought we'd start off this week by each of us sharing what we would recommend for self-care. You could say what you would recommend to Hillary or just what you do that makes you feel better. So
Love it.
Shall we start with the ladies on Skype? Karen, what do you do for self-care?
I'm sitting here thinking about it. Remember, I have four kids. So.
I know. They were taking care of you last time, though. One of them brought you a glass of wine, and I thought that was a lovely, you know, care for you.
That's true. I do go to get a massage once a month.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
And what about your eyelashes?
Oh, yeah. I get eyelash extensions. Well, that's because I had to do a presentation and it was outside and I thought I would sweat my makeup off and look like a raccoon. So I that's why I did it. So
yeah, that's a good one.
Pammy, what about you?
I am into a lot of self-care right now. So I have been getting facials once a month, which I love. And I work out every day.
So. Every day.
That's impressive. Well, okay. That's
take
my dream.
A day off, one day a week.
That's amazing, though. Good for you.
That's why you look fabulous.
I'm not working right now.
Okay. That explains it then.
Yeah, it is hard when you have a job to work out every day.
Oh, and by the way, I have adult children. That's the other reason.
Yes, so. That you're able to do that. So, Andi, what about you?
It's funny because working out was my thing, too, for sure. I don't get to do it every day, but it's the way I feel much better. And when I don't, I really feel it. Getting a massage, I just started doing that once a month. And I went yesterday with my sister-in-law, and I thought the whole time, it took me a while just to get out of the mom head. Oh, I should be doing the laundry. Uh-huh. Saturday's our clean day. I feel so bad for being here, and they're all doing that at home. But I came home, and guess what? They cooked. They cleaned. They knew what to do while I was gone, and I had such a beautiful, glorious day. So,
reminding yourself to
give it to yourself anyhow. Like, get through that wall of, like, I deserve this. I can go do this.
Right.
And then connecting with friends. That's huge. That, you know, releases, I think, oxytocin or something. Not to mention I just enjoy you all, but
you know,
there's some benefits and bonus there.
There's some, Hillary was talking about, like, the time, she spent a lot of time with her grandkids, and she described this really cute, like, two-year-old ballet recital. I literally got teary listening to her describe it. It was so sweet. And she actually said, like, she, although she feels terrible that she's not the president, like, she's grateful that she's having this time with her grandkids. I was like, that is something that women struggle with all the time. Like, you know, your career versus your kids or your grandkids. It's a choice that we all have to make.
Right.
It's
hard. It's a hard choice. And then you get in those moments. I always think about you watching Noah. I remember you described some of your situations where you've been watching Noah at his camp and doing plays and such.
Right.
Where, you know, brought to tears and in that moment. And then when you get in those moments, you kind of feel like, this is what it's all about. This is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Then you go home and you read the news and you get lost in all the chaos, the stress, the hubbub.
Right.
And then you have one of those moments. You're like, oh, I just want to put that stuff all away because this feels like what life is all about,
right.
This moment.
Right. Jackie?
Okay, so I haven't been able to work out in a year, like almost literally a year. So today I was able to. I did a triathlon today.
She did.
Okay, it was in my gym, but it still counts as a triathlon. So I biked, I did the elliptical, and I swam. So I'm really, and I feel so good right now.
And you walked your dog for 45
minutes. I walked my dog
for
45 minutes.
It's a quadrathon or something.
So I think I'm going to say working out and also definitely taking time. I have no guilt when I take time for myself. Mm-hmm. I like to go to the movies.
Good.
I like to go to the movies and sit in a dark theater with myself.
I love that. I haven't done that forever,
and
I but
like
I do
to
love
watch.
That.
And I did that on Friday. I watched Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary.
Then I drove home.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I would recommend to anyone Candy Crush.
Oh, I hate that game. I can't
sorry.
Do it.
I'm totally addicted to
it. It's because you're a logical thinker. I'm always like all over the place.
But it defies logic. I'm watching. I'm trying to figure out like what does the computer in my phone know that I don't know, because you know, sometimes you have to like beat the game. So I'm totally addicted to it. And then this is a really good thing. It's like you turn on your podcast and you listen to your podcast while you're staring at the screen playing Candy Crush, and you're transported to another world.
That's
because
cool.
All sides of your brain are occupied by, you know, nonsense.
Right.
And then you just escape for 10
well,
or 15
that's a good
minutes.
One.
Yeah. That's my self-care.
I play online gin.
Online gin is fun, too.
Yeah. I like it.
Yep. Okay. So, Hillary, there's a few more recommendations for you. Triathlon, indoor triathlon.
In your own mind.
Get your eyelashes done.
Work out.
And exercise.
Get a facial.
Yeah.
And binge watch. I do that well, too.
Yeah, I'm going to take that one from Hillary. God. That's always fun. It always feels indulgent.
And if Hillary says it, it must be all right.
I love to binge watch. Absolutely. But not scary stuff. There's enough scary stuff
exactly.
in the world.
Escapism.
So we're going to go to our round of 3-minute topics, and we have 3 this week. I think we'll save the serious one, the most serious one, for last, the one we've been struggling with. So, Karen, you want to start with Hope Hicks?
So my topic is just trying to figure something out, okay? So I would like to know more about the new White House communications director, because here's a 29-year-old woman in one of the most powerful positions. And so she's never seen in public either. So I was trying to figure out who this person was. And I found some sources on CNBC and Politico and Google. And I guess in a nutshell, I found an article on CNBC that's 6 things you may not know about Hope Hicks. So, first of all, I'd like to see her out there once in a while doing some media, since she's supposed to be the communications director. Yeah, and she keeps putting other people in front, which is very odd. But she is among the highest and the youngest highest paid staffers.
Wow.
She gets $180,000 a year, which was the same salary as Bannon and Kellyanne.
We wanted equal pay. I'm all for that. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'd like to see what she does for it, but I'm going to say I'm okay with that.
It's a little curious. She has close ties to Trump. She used to be a model for Ivanka's style blog.
Huh.
And so that's how she knows
her training.
Trump. I think she'd ever go into politics. She does not.
I think she has a degree in communications or something like that. Or public.
Yeah, it's communications, but no experience in politics outside of that. I mean, to hold the office she holds, that's
pretty
impressive.
High. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why we don't know what's going on ever.
Maybe. That she also, Trump has nicknames for her in public. Mm-hmm. He calls her Hopey and the Hopester. And which is interesting, but exactly my point is, here she is you know, in one of the highest positions, highest paid, and he's still, you know, calling her the Hopester. So that's my topic. It's just trying to figure out. I have about 5 different articles that I've been reading. Supposedly, she really has his ear. That she listened to her, and you know, there's some demeaning things said about her, which can be bothersome because, like you said, it is a woman holding a high power position. He created a position for her that just also happens to be the highest paid.
Yeah,
and in it, she's got an office next to him, and she is with him virtually all of the time, they say.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because when you have a woman who gets a big position like that, a responsible position, you want her to be someone who's representing other women well. Like you said, we don't even know what she does.
We definitely should see the outcome. You should definitely be seeing what's getting done
right
on that salary.
And I think anyone would say his communications team is not on their game.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like to see her. If she is this, you know, yeah. how, or, how her
Oh, so you're saying you wonder if she's just getting a salary because
that's
we
what
don't.
I'm hearing. Yeah.
I think she's clearly not qualified for the role.
Right.
She is publicity shy, which is ridiculous
for a communication
and a model.
Yeah.
Her qualifications are: she is the longest staff member he's had. She's worked for him since 2014. I read. And she's pretty to look at, which I'm sure is important to him.
Yeah.
And she probably placates him. And, but, I mean, this just goes to the, you know, the whole makeup of the Trump administration is unqualified.
Yeah.
And related in many cases.
And related. Yeah. And they're just people that are yes men or yes women for him, which is why they make such terrible, bumbling decisions. And, you know, somebody asked Sarah Huckabee, you know, how she could work for him and the terrible things he said about women. And she's like, well, he made me press secretary or whatever. So, you know, these women do not represent women who've had to work their way up the chain. Right. You know, they're just... they're opportunists.
Yeah, right. I agree. And that doesn't represent the rest of us very well.
Right. That's my point. Pam articulated very well at the end there, that if this is a powerful woman, then I'd like to see her be powerful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if she's going to represent us well.
Well, and he does that not just with women. I mean, it's like, I'm going to find the least qualified person for every job. So.
Yeah.
All right. Pam, you want to talk about climate change?
I chose climate change just because, you know, last week we experienced Hurricane Irma, and 2 weeks before that we had Harvey, and, you know, reporters had been suggesting this was partially due to climate change, and of course our head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, who is an attorney who spent his career suing the EPA, he said this now is not the time to talk about climate change.
I saw that.
Yeah. Of course, now is the time to talk about climate change because all legitimate scientists believe that global warming contributes to the increase in, you know, these massive storms that we're seeing because it warms the ocean, which hurricanes feed off of. And it raises the ocean level, which increases the storm surge, which is, you know, part of the flooding that we saw, at least in Irma. And so it made me think about, you know, Scott Pruitt and the danger that he represents to climate change in this country. I mean, he is systematically within the EPA rolling back the Obama era regulations. I mean, his role there and in private life was to challenge the EPA for big business. And this is what he's doing in the EPA now. And, you know, there's been a lot of people working in the EPA who have leaked information saying that, you know, you can't speak your mind. And if you do, you get fired. They are actively trying to discredit any scientists who speak out within the EPA. One guy was reassigned. He's some sort of scientist, and he was reassigned to like an administrative position. You know, so they're actively trying to get the career scientist to quit. And, you know, this may not be a problem now, but it will be a problem for our children.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is only the beginning. I mean, if anybody saw Al Gore's newest movie, you know, we are in even more danger. We're starting to see the actual effects of climate change. So I think this is something that people, I know in California is very aware of it, but people have forgotten that this is going on behind the scenes, and it's a very important issue.
We have to keep it in the forefront.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
It's hard because they throw so much at us all the time, but climate is a big one.
And at the same time, they're throwing all this at. That's what they're doing behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Changing regulations.
And that's my point, allowing what's going on, you know, in the Twitter universe. And that's all, you know, smoke and mirrors. And behind the scenes, this administration is changing the direction of our democracy. Perhaps, you know, for many, many years if we don't wake up.
Right, so. Right. Well, that's a good point. We need to really keep
it in the
climate,
spotlight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. on the agenda. And when you're calling your senators and your representatives, to save your health care,
right.
don't forget that climate is one we have to keep pushing them on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And trying to keep the high standards, because that's what happened. In past administrations, they set these high standards mm-hmm. for emission control. And then a different administration comes in and reverses it all. It's just like this, the pendulum swing.
And I know Jerry Brown has said in California that California will continue to, adhere to the,
right.
the Paris Agreement. And some other states have said that as well. But
well, there's rumors now that he's reversing himself on the Paris Agreement.
He said today... That's not true.
Well, I think wait,
how many hours ago was that?
That's right. What time is it?
Wait,
tonight it will be.
It could be that he's changed it back.
Yeah. But he said that he would like, before it sounded like such a no reversal, just pulling out. I'm going to pull out no matter what. But now what I heard was really he's trying to negotiate. He'll sit at the table if he can make certain terms where that are more favorable to
now
America.
Now he's trying to
basically.
Prove that he's a good negotiator.
Yeah. So it's like he was just holding that ticket to negotiate. Maybe that's what he was doing with the DACA ticket too, right? It's Jackie's theory of a, he goes home and is like, oh, crap, that's what that meant,
Yeah, he didn't do any research.
Yeah.
I think we get Chuck and Nancy back in there and see. Yeah. Maybe Chuck can charm him again. I don't know.
He said that when he was initially interviewed on the campaign about DACA, he just went on and on like, well, I think, we got to get rid of... And it was clear that he had no idea what DACA was.
Oh, my goodness.
DACA, NAFTA, let's see, the internet, what else?
Yes, the internet. Yeah,
he probably
thinks that's how you get rid of DACA, too, is you just turn a switch. Yeah. You just flip a switch and turn it off.
Ejects him from the seat.
I know that's what he thought about the Muslim ban, right? Is that when he became president, he was going to flip a switch and no more Muslims would come into this country.
Yeah, it's done. I took care of it.
Yep. It's all solved. ISIS is solved. Hooray! Yeah.
And my one policy move.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. Those were two awesome topics.
These are totally awesome.
We're
getting
official.
A call. Oh,
it's official timer.
That was the timer. So now we're going to move on to something that's a little harder to talk about.
And
we know
hard.
Because we were, even as we were waiting for the podcast to start, we were wrestling with this.
Having a hard one to talk about it. But it's been weighing on my head all week since I saw the story. So I feel like I have to talk about it just to get it off my chest. But also to how do we prevent and help from where we sit, So this story is the story of the 8-year-old boy in New Hampshire where he's playing with a bunch of friends and in his area in the yard. And he's 8 and some of the kids are 14 and it's a range of kids between 8 and 14. But in the play, some of the older kids start doing some racial slurs. So the boy is biracial. So they start with racial slurs in the, context of teasing, joking around. And then it escalates to these boys who were doing the racial slurs are now throwing rocks at this kid's feet. Mm. So already you're a human. If you know 8-year-olds and I'm a teacher and the fragility of their egos and what's happening, you are already at humiliation now, like humiliation that's, you can't overcome. But then it escalates to there's a picnic table there and there's a rope swing. And one of the kids puts takes the rope, puts it around his own neck and is like joking around and kind of gets the kid to like, let's play this, do this, puts it around the kid's neck, pushes the kid off the table. The kid is swinging back and forth. So this is like, to me, KKK,
lynching
from, but things I thought like were so long and done. And this is a few weeks ago, this is in August of 2017. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard for me to understand how those kids in that moment didn't feel empathy for this mm-hmm. child, how they could not, even if you were raised with hate, I still feel like there's some good in all humanity. Like it baffles me. And so like, as we always say white women in suburbia where we are, we're not around people doing it. We're not around the people getting done to. How can we help from where we sit here?
Right.
And it's intolerable. I love at least 100 people spoke out and they had a little, it was a march or gathering and they were singing We Shall Overcome. And there's a voice there of 100 people caring in that moment.
Right.
The case is so fresh and new that police, I don't know what the resolve is going to be. Are these kids going to be held as criminals or not, or how it's going to come down, because you have to gather all the information and stuff. But again, just unacceptable, and having as many voices step up to say, this is not okay. This is not a making right. America great again. This is going backwards to, you know, a place that is so inhumane that it's inconceivable. I feel like you can never project what someone else would do, but I just remember when there were shootings and things happening in Obama's administration, mm-hmm. he would speak out and say how sickening this was. Could be just a one line. I haven't heard anything Trump has said or not said yeah. about this, or even aware it's on his radar. Probably not, because they seem to be sheltered from those kind of yeah, stories,
right.
I feel.
Right.
Well, so I just say, you know, there's bad people on both sides.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, from this 8-year-old. Like, yeah. can you even imagine anything this 8-year-old could possibly do?
Do we know, I mean, does anyone know what the kids, did they ask them what made you think this was okay? Were they mimicking something they'd seen?
Yeah, that or? Information hasn't come out. The police in the area have said, you know, we can't release any information. And doing interviews and can't release any information.
It's hard, right?
But when they interviewed the boys, the 8-year-old's family,
yeah.
the grandmother said those boys have teased him and did racial slurs in the past.
Okay.
Again, also not acceptable. And
nobody's intervened
No one's intervened before. And they're also like hanging out, playing around, you know, which happens in neighborhoods. That part's, you know,
right.
you would be all together. But, you know, he's subject to that in such danger that... But to me, the bottom line is in the heart of those boys. It's like, if you can get to that, even if you're raised with hate, where can the intervention mm-hmm. be? Is it the schools? Where can other avenues reach kids like that so they feel empathy?
Hey, how right. about if we start with the top, the leader of our country?
Right.
Condemning
and
it
we
would
don't
be huge.
Have a racist right. leader.
That would help.
Possibly
yeah.
that might help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know
well,
what?
Well, as you said, Obama used to get on TV and say something, yeah. you know, but... I actually have friends who are, well, they're no longer friends of mine, but they were Trump supporters. And they said that Obama caused a greater racial divide in this country by speaking out, which is ridiculous.
No,
but
no.
I think, Patty, it goes back to that article that you posted about, you know, Trump being the ultimate result.
The first white president. Yeah.
The white supremacy mm-hmm. in this country, that it's always been there, and somehow having a black African-American president was an insult to everybody who feels that whites are, you know, better.
Right, right.
And it's just, and now we have a president who will not speak out against it. And so for kids, there's nobody, you know, in authority. I mean, their parents maybe, but you need
we don't
know. No, it can't be that. Their parents, because they wouldn't have done such a thing if their parents had raised them
right, right.
that way. Probably. Like, odds
they're
are.
They're not getting, their
yeah.
parents aren't
they're in a group
modeling.
Of, in a, yeah. in a like, you know, groupthink place.
Yeah.
So that, I guess that's the question, like the prevention of, if it keeps getting passed down
right,
from family. Because
right.
I kind of, like I told Patty, I was naive enough to think, you know, it's an old white boys club and they'll eventually die out, quite honestly. But it doesn't. It keeps filtering
it's
down.
It's scary
it keeps
when
popping
it's young
up.
People. Yeah.
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 Well, we have no moral leadership in this country.
Right.
Yes. That's what we're missing. So.
Well, I think we have to take that leadership. And that was one thing I wanted to follow up on the when we talked about the article by Ta-Nehisi Coates last week, because I think I fell into a trap that he was cautioning us against, which is that we kind of started talking about the group that everyone likes to talk about as the reason Trump got elected, which is those blue-collar white people who are struggling economically, and we kind of got caught in talking about, well, are they racist? And what Coates was pointing out in the article is that whites across every demographic, you could slice it by gender, you can slice it by income, you can slice it by education, you can slice it by age, they went in the majority for Trump. And I think we saw that in Charlottesville. We saw a lot of college students, you know, who were marching in this white supremacist rally. So it's not just, you know, Americans who are suffering economically. All white people have mm-hmm. a responsibility in this disaster.
All groups. All groups. Yeah.
And so we need to stop trying to figure out who's guilty, and we need to all look at ourselves and say, how do we stop this thing which is destroying our country? Because if racism obviously played a huge role in getting Trump elected, it's hurting mm-hmm. all of us, and we can't just sit back and be passive about it. And so I think, you know, Andy's right. That's the big question is, where is the intervention? Where do we change that? And I'm telling you, like, the only thing that I could come up with is, like, we have to ask more of ourselves, of course, but we also have to ask more of our elected officials at every level. So, like, I have a litmus test that I won't vote for someone who's not pro-choice, right?
Right.
unless if it came down between Trump and someone who was on the fence. I don't know. But I think we should also have a litmus test, which is that, are you going to address racial inequality? Is that part of your platform? If not, then you're not a progressive candidate.
I agree totally.
You know, we all have to start making that part of our agenda. So I wanted to read you one little thing about this that is on this topic before we go to our speed round. There's a publication called The Root, which gives you the news from a Black perspective. I like reading it because the writing is often really good. You guys know my background's way back in journalism, so I'm always happy when I see good writing. And one of the things that happened this week, after Trump again doubled down on Charlottesville, the one Black senator went to his office and tried to explain to him why you can't say there's good people on both sides, and he still doubled down. And then there was a white officer who was acquitted for shooting a Black man in St. Louis, yes, and there were riots. Mm-hmm. And this is an article that was written in The Root as a result of that. And it's, there's some words that I can't say, and there's also some swear words in here, so I'm going to leave them out or use an abbreviation. But the article's called S Finally Hits the Fan in St. Louis Like We Said It Would. It's written by Michael Harriet. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it to you, but I think it's really helpful for people who are trying to understand where does the violence come from and is it okay? And so here's what he said. What did you think would happen? Once when I was visiting an elementary school classroom, a second grader wanted to tell me about his trip to SeaWorld. He told me and the rest of the class about the dolphins, octopi, and all the rare and crazy fish he saw. Then he went into an elaborate story about watching a killer whale. By sheer coincidence, this kid happened to be a visitor at SeaWorld in 2010 on the exact day the orca killed its trainer in front of the amusement park onlookers. By the time he finished his story, the entire class was silent until another student yelled out from the back of the class, "It's a killer whale. What did you think would happen?" Everyone laughed except me and him. I assumed that he was sad for having witnessed something so tragic, so I attempted to console him, but he shrugged at me and said, "Nah, it was kind of beautiful, actually." And then he goes on to say, "There was an injustice in St. Louis today. After hearing how St. Louis police officer Jason Stockley said he was going to kill Anthony Lamar Smith, chased him down and shot him at point-blank range, even though Smith was not holding a weapon, Circuit Judge Timothy Wilson pronounced Stockley not guilty and slandered Smith in the process, reasoning that Smith was a dope boy meaning a drug dealer, and saying that an urban heroin dealer not in possession of a firearm would be an anomaly." And it goes on, he talks more about what actually happened. And then I just want to read his concluding paragraph, which is also very moving. He says, "We told you this would happen, not because we have a crystal ball or employ a soothsayer, because it was bound to happen, because science, human nature, and common sense dictate that nothing can boil forever without either melting or exploding." He says, the S is hitting the fan in St. Louis, and it is only the beginning. It might not be entirely peaceful. It could get ugly," which it did. "Protests, whether violent or peaceful, will not bring back Anthony Lamar Smith. They will not convict Jason Stockley. There might not be any logic to where the feces sprays or who gets hit, but it is as just and logical as the indiscriminate killing of Black men by law enforcement officers all across the country. It might not be fair, and it might not solve the problem, but whenever a community of people finally decide to stand up to their oppressors, no matter how bloody, ugly, or out of control it may get, it's kind of beautiful, actually." So I just wanted to read that because I think it's important to hear that perspective and understand, you know, sometimes you push people to the limit and they don't see any other alternative. And I think that Trump is definitely pushing you know, these people of color to their limit. And they've tried reasoning with him. They've tried being peaceful. They've had a lot of protests. And at some point, they feel like they don't have any options. So
I totally get that.
Yeah.
It's a bummer, though, because then it feeds their mentality of, well, see, they, you know, they're violent people. They're, it just feeds into the
right.
wrong story.
Right.
So, but it makes sense. Any human behavior for anything. It happened with
right.
Rodney King. When
right.
that happened, it was the same thing. So, and it would happen. It would happen to anyone. I think it's a lot of what terrorism is. Desperation
yeah.
and pushed into that place of feeling no recourse.
Right. I just feel like it's so frustrating, too, because he wouldn't have to do a lot. To
say this is wrong. That's
yeah.
all you got to say. Instead of tweeting, retweeting, you know, that horrible thing, it's just say this is wrong. That's just the governor of New Hampshire stepped up and said for this 8-year-old boy, this is wrong. We
right.
will not tolerate this in the state. And he's asking, he's putting other police on the case to check this out. Like, there's no not giving information.
Right.
He's trying to, like, at least he's speaking out and saying, no, this is not okay. We're going to figure this out.
Right. And I think the fact that Obama was trying to put police reforms in place and
right.
address this
right.
was helpful and easing some of that tension, and now, I mean, they're
like
rolling
there.
That back.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
every good thing he's done, they're rolling back.
Yeah, it's backing
that
people into
agenda.
A corner where they feel like they have no other options.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so like building empathy amongst white suburban women.
Yeah,
I want to put a shout out to the show on Netflix now, Strong Island. Have
no,
you seen that?
Seen that. No.
Okay, so I didn't. It was an accident that I saw. I was folding laundry today, actually, and I didn't click quick enough to go to like a comedic thing, and it just started playing, and I was so drawn in. And it's what drew me in is basically as a, the filmmaker's brother was also had a victim of racial violence, and so he's just trying to process and figure out, and the mom and the family are. So they're starting out with the mom just telling their story. And as she's telling their story, they move from Charlottesville, I think it was, to Long Island in New York. And she's showing pictures. And in the pictures, like, they buy a house that looks like the house I grew up in the Midwest in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And the pictures all look like she's standing in front of a school, the brick building, with her kids. It's all my childhood in the 60s. That her son who died was born in 67, so it's like the same period. But you look at this, basically, the only difference is white middle class versus black strivers. Like, they went through a
uh-huh.
lot in Charlottesville,
right.
then moved to, they're constantly working way harder than we ever had to work to get what we got. And they ended up buying, it was in a purposely segregated neighborhood. They didn't want it to be segregated, but that's how it was. And that's what they found. And it's really relatable because as you're looking at it, you're like, wow, it almost looks like my life. The only difference is
uh-huh.
brown and black.
Right.
And you know how it's going to play out because I know the premise of the story. I didn't watch it all, but immediately I could feel connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to give a shout out there to check it out and watch it all the way through. I'm going to, after this, I want to go finish it.
You're going to go watch it.
Yeah,
now.
I want to finish
Netflix.
It. I mean, I know what happens, but I want to empathize with what happens.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. It's called Strong Island. There is a comedic show on Comedy Central, Strong Island. It is not that one. This is a different one.
Cool.
But really good and powerful.
Well, that brings us to our speed round then. Is that your
yeah.
is that your yes, or do you have a different yes?
I have my it's so funny. My yes is also on Netflix.
Okay.
It's atypical because I watched it after you guys
yeah.
mentioned it on the show, but my yes isn't just about the show in general. I liked it so much after two episodes, I went to get my 14-year-old to say, again, it's about building empathy, right?
Mm-hmm.
The boy in Atypical has autism, so being a mother of two teenage boys in a white elementary or a white high school, I want them to have empathy and
right.
realize, connect with these kids. I go in his room, and he's on episode 8 of the same show, and he's loving it. And then after the show, we both binge-watched it separately because we're on different episodes. After the show, we talked about certain scenes in there, and he just couldn't believe how there's some teasing scenes and stuff. And he was like, I don't understand how those, like, to him, he thought that was so far-fetched. Of course, kids would realize that that's not okay. Like, something
right.
would internally give them warnings of, you are pushing the limit and that's not okay.
Right.
So we talked about that. And then the other issue came up for me, and that is, being a teacher, I always have some autistic children, and that concept of can we modify or change this thing for this one child? So they have a school dance. Can we modify and change this thing for one child?
Yep.
And that's always been a big dialogue in schools. Do you change for one child and everyone else has to stop for the one child? But what's beautiful in that is that the dance that they do at the end, they did modify it, and it comes out so beautiful. It was such a beautiful experience, and I thought to see that in fruition, even as an image, was such a good, powerful image to see that you could actually do it. And it wasn't like it was only made a win-win for the one child. It was a win-win for everyone. Right. Everyone's having a good time. It was amazing. And I was sharing that concept with a friend, and Mary said that out in real life, in real world, people are starting to do that as well as the music festivals.
Right.
Like, that is starting to popcorn up, where it seemed unfathomable at one point.
Right. So this is a, there's like eight episodes?
Yes,
an eight episode series on Netflix, and it focuses on a family that has an autistic child, and I binge watched it too. I loved it. I thought it was awesome, and there's also some great young women. I love the sister is
and
awesome.
She's amazing
and
strong.
She's a great role model, and the boy winds up with a girlfriend who's super smart.
Speaks
and,
her mind,
yeah,
too.
She's awesome, too. Yeah. So
my yay was connecting with my 14-year-old white boy son. That was like, oh, he has a heart, too. Good.
Yeah.
he gets it. And he chose it. And he chose to watch this versus, you know, all the gazillion other things out there he could be watching.
Awesome. So, Pam, do you have a yes or a no for your first Mom's Talking episode?
Yes. And actually, they're both the same thing.
Oh,
so
tricky.
My yes is I'm so glad to see Hillary back and listen to an intelligent woman. And I'm glad to see that she appears to be healthy and well. And so wonderful to read. I haven't read the book, but I've read excerpts. And, you know, I wish that she had been more open on the campaign trail, but you know, she's held to a different standard than any other
so
candidate.
So different.
That's because, I guess it's because it's her. I hope it's not just because she's a woman. I mean, there are some, you know, there's a history there. But anyway, my no is also that Hillary's back because, you know, that was such a painful campaign and it opens that rift again in the Democratic Party between Hillary and Bernie, and
Bernie's not a Democrat.
I know that, but his supporters are. Most of his supporters are Democrats.
Yeah.
So we need to figure out how to heal that rift.
Yep.
And it just, you know, it's now given Donald Trump the punching bag of Hillary again, and I just hate that he's able to reach out now and, you know, tweet about her and
I think that's a that's a losing approach for Trump.
I think so,
you would think so.
I think that just reminds people.
It's just more of that ugliness again. Mm-hmm. That's not her fault. I'm just saying it's both positive and negative.
Yeah. Well, I would just say this because I know a lot of people are reluctant to read or listen to the book. Because it does open some old wounds. And I know people who were, you know, they had to read it because they're reporters, and then they said, oh, it was really hard to read and blah, blah. But I personally find that listening to it is very cathartic, and she has really worked hard at understanding what happened, and I think she has some really important things to say for Democrats. And I kind of feel like Bernie supporters are always going to be Bernie supporters, but I think the Democratic Party as a whole is ready to move beyond that. I mean, they're going to fight it.
You know, Patty, I think the publicity has focused on those points about the book, but from what I understand from listening to reviewers, those are not the primary points in the book.
Right. They sensationalize that stuff. She does make it very clear that she feels Comey cost her the election. She won't deny that. And she thinks that Trump's campaign colluded with the Russians. And she's very straightforward about that. And you know what? I'm glad she's talking straight. Because she talks about how she felt that she had to be very cautious. And she does feel she was held to a different standard. And she kind of felt like she would be criticized if she's, you know, was more honest, but she was also criticized. She just couldn't win when she was a candidate, and now she feels free, and she's saying the things that need to be said. And I think she's going to be a real asset to Democrats going forward, because I know there's a lot of us who were waiting for her to come back, and I think she wants to try and rally the troops and really work with Democratic candidates and do what she can for them. She said she's focusing on 2018. So
yeah, winning the Senate back.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, the House.
The House.
Yeah. We have hope to flip the House. Who knows what we could do for the Senate? But can you guys tell that I love her?
Yeah.
I love her.
I heard a rumor that she was thinking about running for mayor of New York. Did you hear that? Mm.
I haven't heard it.
What?
Say that again, Karen.
No more politics.
Oh, she said no more politics? More. Okay.
maybe campaign advice.
Your new eyelashes
are
gone.
She will not run for office.
Okay.
You guys cut out for a
minute. Yeah.
You did too.
She said you will not run. My eyelashes are still.
Jackie, got a yes, no?
I have a no. The meme we've been kind of talking about. I hadn't seen it till Andrea brought it up today, and I cannot believe that the President of the United States spends his time tweeting things like that.
I know.
So if you haven't seen it, it's a video of Trump golfing, and a golf ball hits Hillary in the back of the head as she's getting on a plane, and she falls over. So that's my no.
That's a hell no.
That's a hell no. I'm
sorry.
And a hell yes for me is just that I got to exercise this week. So.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. Can we say that you've been recuperating from...
Two surgeries and a staph infection?
So it's not just... I'm
not just lazy.
Yeah. No, it's not just time or laziness. Like, this is a real physical comeback.
And, you know, you have to, like, really appreciate it when you can move. Like, move freely. And... because I will never take that for granted again.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do my yes because I was going to build on Andy's yes. So I am going to recommend an Amazon series called One Mississippi. And I don't know if anyone's watched it.
No, but it's on my list.
I just binge watched the second season. The first season I was okay about it. But the second season they really... dug in, and they this is the story of Tig Notaro, who's a comedian who grew up in Mississippi, and for the purposes of the show, she's a gay comedian, and she goes home to Mississippi, and she confronts all of the issues in the Deep South that would be challenging for a liberal lesbian, and they also. The whole season was written all by women. She said all the writers were women, and they attacked the issue of sexual harassment, sexual assault, molestation. And you're like, now you're going, oh, this sounds like a lot of fun. But they actually do it with this, like, very light touch. There's things about... I know, it's hard to believe. There's things about it that are funny. Tig has, like, this deadpan sense of humor, which allows her to really deal with this issue. You find that, like, you like all the characters. There's herself, her brother, and her stepfather... all recovering from her mom's death, and you're kind of cheering for all of them. They're all out looking for love in their own ways. But more importantly, like I said, I think they really have some really interesting conversations about sexual harassment, sexual assault. And since we have the sexual assaulter in chief in the presidency, I am glad that people are taking on these issues and that at least... You know, in entertainment, people aren't afraid to speak out and resist our horrible leader and to make some really brave comments, but still do it in a way that's, like, entertaining and interesting. And
accessible and shining a light on it. That's what they say. Democracy dies in darkness.
Right.
Is that?
That's the Washington Post.
So you gotta put the light on it. Shine the light. Yeah. Bring it to light.
Yeah, don't be afraid to. It's like, you know, this, with
having the talk,
racism and sexism and all these things that are really hard to talk about, but we have to talk about it. And if there's people who are talented enough to make it, you know, something you want to watch and consume as well, then mm-hmm. more power to them. So check it out.
In fact, in the entertainment industry, if you are for Trump, you are pretty much shunned.
Yeah. It's pretty hard.
How about you?
Karen, do you have a yes, no?
Yeah. Now, of course, you know, I did want to add something, and I guess this could kind of be my yes. My yes, of course, is all things Hillary. I think I cried through
yes.
the first three interviews. It was so painful. I didn't realize how much pain and anxiety I've been carrying around. But I think also my yes is, you know, speaking of race, my perspective is interesting in that my kids are biracial mm-hmm. and my husband is black. And, you know, I've talked a lot about Hillary in these elections. And I said the other day how angering it is that he is, you know, pushed what he's done to the women's movement. I should say in a good part, he has re-enlightened women. Now, speaking of white women, us sitting here talking, he has pushed us to take action. And I think that is a positive.
Right.
And, you know, I told my husband, it's like, so he insults women. He talks about them, you know, in demeaning fashion. He hits Hillary with the golf. Blah, blah, blah. My husband looked at me and kind of gave me a smile. And I said, why are you smiling? And he said, I know what that feels like. I felt that way being a black man my whole life.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, that's a plus and a minus that, you know, now we do have a way to connect to, you know, Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And a way that you were talking about that it is deep and empathetic. And, you know, you never know someone's experience until you've had a similar experience.
Right.
And, you know, so I think that is a positive and a negative that we had to be as white women pushed into a certain position where we are now ready to push back hard.
Right,
and
right.
Like I said, plus and a minus. And of course, the GIF of Trump was the most insulting thing I have seen in such a long time that I was ready to throw my phone out the window.
Yeah. As you say, it physically hurt.
Yeah.
To see it physically
sickening.
Hurt.
Yeah.
And I could never been so insulted. That is our president? That is the most disgusting display. There was a really great article, too, about, you know, why that's not the only thing he's done. You know, when he showed the CNN reporter getting train after the Charlottesville
The train,
report
as
well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just...
He's sick.
And then him trying to get Jemele Hill fired for her comments about him being a racist. I mean, he's just aggressive and violent, and like Pam said, no moral compass at all.
No,
and this is what our country is dealing with.
Right.
So in a way, it's good. We're being pushed to re-examine our own values, but it's really painful to go through.
It is,
you know?
Painful. And we just want to say, because we had a long discussion about this while we were waiting for the technology to get put in place, that, you know, we certainly don't compare ourselves to people of color and what some of the trials that they've been through, or immigrants or any of that. As white women, you know, we recognize our privilege. But as women, we definitely have a lot at stake. And as parents, we have a lot at stake because Trump is endangering all of us. So hopefully what I think, you know, we struggle with, what are we trying to bring to the table with this podcast other than just
venting and ranting.
Right. You're right, Karen, that I think more of us now, there's more groups who are being impacted by the, you know, basically there's a very, very small group that's protected at this point by mm-hmm. this presidency. And women are one of the groups now who are very much in danger, and especially women of color. So what we're trying to say is that we want to understand more. Yeah. We want to speak out against it, and we want to figure out how we can be good allies with mm-hmm. those other groups, because we do believe that if we bring everybody together, who has a grievance,
more
that,
voices,
right?
More
and not just
more voices,
not just everybody who has a grievance, but everybody who is insulted and enraged and annoyed.
Even if it's someone else's grievance.
Right,
like basically,
right.
It's, there's many voices here to help. There's many hands,
right.
You know, hopefully.
Right, and we're just trying to figure out how do we fit into that.
Where can we help?
Right, and hopefully, as white women, we can speak to other white women and we can help our group become stronger because we wouldn't want to speak for anyone else,
we couldn't.
But we want we want other groups to know that we're here to be good allies and just so you know, we hear you.
Yeah, we're here for equality for everyone, any humanity, you know.
Yeah.
And I think after Charlottesville, even you know, like our youngest sister who has voted most of her life but never participated in any sort of political, you know, protest, she was ready to go protest Trump's rally here in Phoenix because she said, that's it. I've had enough. I can no longer sit on the sidelines.
You had to stand up and be counted almost, you know, right?
Right. You have to speak out.
As you said, even though we're white women, we can be pushed to action based on, you know,
injustice.
His actions or inactions towards white supremacy.
Right.
And you know, and now we're looking for ways in Arizona to participate in with Democratic groups because we have two Republican senators, and one of them is up for re-election next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is what white women can do, as opposed to maybe some of our ethnic counterparts, where we can influence perhaps, you know, other white women to get active.
Yeah. Yep, get active. Mm-hmm. And there are many communities that they're being silenced. You know, like immigrant communities, a lot of those people are afraid to come out and protest because they're, you know, they're purposely making them very fearful with their immigration policies.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the luxury of being able to speak out. And so we can't speak for them, but we can certainly speak as their allies and say that this distresses us as well. So we'll keep struggling with all these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every week. Jackie, do you want to do a recap?
Oh, my God. I'm not going to be able to do this justice. I'm trying not to crinkle my paper because it's so loud in the thing.
That's all right.
All right. So we talked about, there's some themes here, but we started off talking about Hillary and her suggestions for self-care. And then we each talked about what we do for self-care. So binge watching is okay.
Yeah.
getting massages, working out, getting facials, and taking time for yourself without guilt is good. And then we went on to a 3-minute topic round. Karen talked about HOPIX, and that's Trump's communication.
The mystery of HOPIX.
The mystery of HOPIX. and all these articles and things that we mentioned, we'll try to post those so that you can read them if you're interested. Andrea talked about the disgusting story in New Hampshire with the 8-year-old who was basically lynched and
heartbreaking.
And trying to find some glimmer of, you know, that 100 people did gather and in protest. So that's good. Pam talked about climate change and how Scott Pruitt says that now is not the time to be talking about climate change. So that's pretty disgusting. And we need to keep that in the spotlight. Patty talked about The Root, which is from a black perspective. And she read a story about St. Louis. And again, just some of the things that we don't have to ever experience. And it's just mind blowing. And then we did a speed round of yes, no's. And so here's where the themes are. The themes are that we like to binge watch television and that Trump sucks. Those are the themes. So,
themes of the week.
Andrea talked about two shows, Atypical and Strong Island. Pam talked about Hillary and how thinking about Hillary is kind of a yes and a no because she feels great that Hillary's back in the spotlight, but horrible because it might open the rift between Bernie and Hillary. I talked about the stupid tweet that Trump sent out with the gif of him hitting Hillary in the head with a golf ball, which makes me sick to my stomach. And exercise, of course. And Patty talked about another show that you might want to check out on Netflix called One Mississippi, which...
Amazon, I think.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's on Amazon. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Amazon.
That's all right.
All right.
I think they'll do okay without us.
Oh, no, you never know. So One Mississippi, which in a, I don't know how this happens, but a funny way, talks about sexual harassment, sexual assault, and sexual molestation. So if you're looking for a good laugh,
I know.
I guess you should check that one out.
I know it's hard to believe, but I'm telling you, it's really well done.
All right. And then Karen talked about Hillary and how she's just didn't realize how upset she was about everything that's happened. And she's glad to see her back in the spotlight. And did I get everybody? Is that everybody?
I think that's it.
I know, that's pretty good. That's fast.
Jackie, you'll laugh, you'll cry.
Okay, yeah. I'm not going to say anything else.
You'll shut off the TV? I don't know.
All right.
All right, that's it for this week of Mom's Talking.
Bye, Moms.
We'll be back next week. We'll have all this figured out by next week,
I wish.
Sure.
I so wish. And wouldn't that be wonderful?
Now we're going to binge watch Game of Thrones.
All right.
Yay.